thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio.
Most of us, when we're growing up, have dreams of what we would like to do when we grow up. But a diagnosis of sight loss can sometimes cause us to have a rethink. Now, this happened to Ruby Blythe-Smith, and she joins me now to tell us her story. Hello.
Hello.
Now, let me say, you had a dream like a lot of girls, didn't you, when you were in your early teens? You wanted to be a hairdresser and a beautician.
Yeah, that sort of thing. I've always been interested in the fashion industry. I still am. But back then, yeah, that was basically all I wanted to do. I didn't have any qualifications at that point either. So I was sort of thinking about doing an apprenticeship or something.
And then you got a diagnosis of retinitis pigmentosa. How did that change things? Your age of 13, weren't you?
Well, yeah, I was diagnosed when I was 13 with it. I already had RP when I wanted to be sort of a hairdresser, beautician, but it hadn't progressed to obviously the stage that it is now. At that point, it was pretty much just night blindness. So it wasn't something that affected me on a day-to-day basis. But obviously, over the past few years, since 13, now through to 21, it's obviously got a lot worse, and I've lost my peripheral vision, and different light affects me now, and that sort of thing. So,
when you were first diagnosed, did you find that it was something you just wanted to put out of your mind?
Basically, yeah. Like, I mean, my dad has it, so there was always a chance that I would get it. But I was tested when I was a child, and there was no signs of it then. So when I was 13 and sort of like got the diagnosis and started to sort of see these differences with my night vision and all of that sort of thing, I basically just pretended it wasn't happening. And for all intensive purposes, my eyes don't look like they've got anything wrong with them. So I just basically lived as a sighted person. I mean, I wouldn't even like tell my friends or, you know, a lot of my family weren't aware of it and that sort of thing. It was just sort of quite private, and it wasn't something that I even really wanted to think about that much. So it was just, you know, this thing that I had that I avoided massively.
I've got central vision loss, and I can empathise with that. I did completely the same thing. I was in business, and I didn't want people to know that I had a sight issue. Meanwhile, I'm terrified because I know it's getting worse, and I'm going to have to do something about it. It was a sort of, I don't know, self-preservation, I think.
Yep, definitely. And I think a lot of it has to do with pride as well. Like, I take a lot of pride in my appearance and how I look. And I sort of misguidedly, obviously, thought that being obviously disabled, having a stick or a dog or anything like that would just be too much for me at that point. Obviously, that was all a bit of a naive view, I think. Like, but it has taken time to get to this sort of point of acceptance. It's almost been like the sort of five stages of grief or whatever. Like that you sort of go through like anger and denial and all of that, and then eventually get to acceptance, which is sort of where I am now with Ziggy, my dog.
Yeah, you've got a lovely black lab, haven't you? Guide dog. She looks gorgeous.
Yeah, she's absolutely beautiful. She's my complete world, basically. Mm. I love her to pieces.
Has that made a big difference to you then?
Well, yeah, she's completely changed my life. Before I had her, I hadn't been out at night on my own in about 7 years. So I was quite limited. And also getting about during the day, I was becoming more and more dependent on my friends and my family, even just sort of popping to the shop during the day, and something really mundane and mediocre seemed really, really difficult. So I applied for a guide dog, and I was on the wait list for about 4-5 years almost. It was quite a long time. And I eventually got the call that I was getting her when I was decorating my new flat that I moved into. And I was literally painting the walls, jumping around, dancing, you know, with happiness when I found out. She's enabled me to go to university in Colchester. She's enabled me to have just basically a normal life, as normal as it can be, having a dog come everywhere with you.
Yeah, the thing is, of course, you get excited like that and you think, well, this is going to open the world up. But it's not always plain sailing with a guide dog, is it, either, when you're travelling about?
No, I mean, the problems I've had with her have generally been sort of an access refusal I had with the taxi. Because obviously, like I was saying, before I had Ziggy, there was no obvious sign that I was blind. All of a sudden, this whole new range of discrimination sort of comes in just by having her. It's more like looks from the general public and ignorant comments and being harassed by people when we go out to dinner and stuff, asking me loads of questions. And I just sort of want to get on with my normal life. But by having Ziggy, it just opens up this new door of people wanting to know about me and about her and her job. And I'm just sort of a normal girl. I don't really want to be constantly talking to people about my eyesight. I just like, even now, it's not something that's like the major focal point in my life. I'm just blind. It's not all of me, except by having Ziggy, sort of everyone assumes it is.
Yeah, it's a whole big world of different things. I mean, how do you find, obviously, you said you're down to basically some tunnel vision now, and you're really, you know, you're proud of your appearance, you take care of yourself. How do you feel with that? How do you deal with that when you know people are staring at you at times, or you get that feeling that people are staring?
Well, at first, like, I remember when I first got Ziggy, I was training with her and I was in the city, and my trainer and me were working out how to go down steps with her. This was in the city centre in Norwich, and I remember those people just staring at me. This was the first time I've ever experienced it, and they were sort of muttering about the fact that I was taking a while to walk down these steps and all of this. And at that point, I literally just burst into tears in the middle of the city, and I took it really personally and took it to heart. Nowadays, obviously, with tunnel vision, I don't often see it a lot of the time, which is quite a bit of a benefit. If I'm out with my friends or my mom or something, they might point it out to me. But generally now my view just sort of becomes a little bit more angry and less tolerant, because, like, I just feel, like I said, like a normal person. I don't feel like I deserve all of the looks and the stares and the comments and all of it that comes with it. So now I'm just like, I will stick up for myself. I'm a lot less tolerant than I would have been.
Good girl.
It often gets me in trouble, but, you know, I'd rather.
But it's getting a balance, isn't it? Because some people genuinely are curious, and it can be a great social aspect having a guide dog, because I sometimes babysit my friend's guide dog. He's called Lucas, and he comes with a train, and people always talk, well, they talk to him rather than they talk to me. So it's getting that balance
thing,
isn't it?
Yeah. They always look at Ziggy, and I mean, at university, everybody knows Ziggy's name, and I'm sort of just the girl that has Ziggy. So Ziggy is literally just, because she's a beautiful dog as well, you know, she really takes the focus away from me, which at times can be brilliant. But there are other times, I mean, I think it was at Christmas last year, my mum paid for me to get my makeup done in the city centre by Urban Decay, which is just sort of this makeup company. And that was the first time that the focus was just purely on me and it wasn't on Ziggy. And, like, that was really nice to just feel like a normal person again, because I feel like a lot of my identity now is centered around the fact that I've got a guide dog. And I don't think that it necessarily should be the case, but she is a great social factor. I mean, my friends that I've made at uni have all been made through Ziggy, you know, going up to them and saying hello and licking them and stuff. So, you know, she is good in that aspect. But like you said, it's just the balance between too much and too little.
Now, I've sensed through your life there, and things I've read and with you talking there, that you've had quite a lot of frustrations. And this actually prompted you to change direction, didn't it, in where you want to be as an adult?
Yeah, I mean, I worked with the City College, which is sort of local college in Norwich, their company Mint, which is basically about getting young people back into work after experiencing sort of mental health or disabilities, etc. And I originally obviously wanted to be a hairdresser. And then when I started getting back into education, I went to City College and did a access course there. I really wanted to be an aid worker in the Middle East. This was pre-Ziggy. But I'm really interested in that part of the world and the politics there, and I just wanted to offer my help in some way. But then sort of obviously my eyes are at a point where that would be impossible anyway. But even with a dog, it would be like just a complete no-go. So I had to sort of do a bit of a 360 and think about, okay, so what can I physically do and what do I want to do? Because I think there are a lot of jobs that blind people can do that they might not want to do, but feel like they have to do because that's all they can do, sort of thing. Whereas I thought, okay, well, I can be a politician or I can go into law. And that's sort of when I did my degree and started thinking about actually being a lawyer. Because I always say to people, that's one of the jobs that I'd love to do that I'll never need my eyes for. My brain won't start failing me, hopefully. Just my eyes. So law, I think, is just perfect for me.
And how is that going then?
Well, the degree is going really well. I obviously passed my first year. I'm now in my second year. I really enjoy it. It's to be honest, second year hasn't got many modules that I'm enjoying. But in terms of actually wanting to be a lawyer, that passion hasn't gone at all. You know, I do a lot of like voluntary work. I'm trying to get a lot of like legal placements at the moment. I'm actually planning next July to apply for a job with the Government Legal Service because they recruit 2 years in advance. So, I mean, the thought of working for the government is just incredible to me because I've always loved politics, always been interested in it. And, you know, having that say and controlling, writing bills and legislation would just be amazing.
So do you think having that goal is something that really has helped you get focused?
Yeah, to be honest, having that drive has really made me just be like, you know, I don't, obviously I have issues with Ziggy and my eyes and stuff. And I know that that's a reality, but it also keeps me going at those times where I just feel like I want to give up. Like I've had a lot of problems at university in terms of my benefits being stopped because I'm at university. Obviously, I was on employment support allowance prior to being at university because I was struggling to find reasonable and suitable employment. So now I had no sort of income apart from my student loan. So I've been really struggling financially, and it sort of at times feel as if the government is doing all they can do to stop me from being at university and getting there. But I just want to do it more to like prove everybody wrong. And at the moment, there are no judges with a guide dog in that top sort of legal sector, I guess. So, you know, I'd love to be one of the first doing that.
I think sometimes the pressure we feel as people with a visual impairment is that we've got to keep a smile on our face, and you know we can do anything we like, but it can be pretty tough. Things are just harder to do, aren't they?
I think especially in terms of studying, I found it a lot harder than a lot of my peers, not on the basis of the content, because again, that's my brain and that's not the issue, but the amount of reading that I have to do puts such a strain on my eyes. Like recently, they've just been hurting so much by the time I get home. So when it comes to doing further reading and sort of my homework and that sort of thing, I do find it tough. I obviously have special software on my computer that helps me a bit with the lectures and with the reading and things, but it still doesn't 100% take the strain off me. So I do struggle with that. And also just like the fact that like there are times where I think, okay, so what if I go completely blind? You know, how will I cope with that? Because with each stage, obviously, like I eventually become accepting of it. But at this point, I've lived with no peripheral vision, etc., for such a long time. Like the past 2 years have just been sort of minutely getting worse, that I've kind of become comfortable with it and I've adapted to it. And the thought of actually losing all my vision is now sort of the most scary thing, because I wonder if that will set me back in terms of my career.
Yeah, it's a lot of things to take into account. And there's a lot of people around the world who face the same thing, and I think a lot of sighted people just don't aware. It's not just about the sight, it's about so many other things. But you're positive at the moment of where you're going.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the only thing you can do really is keep positive. Obviously there are times where it gets me down and I worry and I get anxious. I mean, I suffer from anxiety anyway, so having a condition that basically means you're a ticking time bomb and can sort of lose your vision at any time whilst having the anxiety as well is really hard, because I'm always worrying about the future. I think blindness has had to make me think about the future a lot more than I would be if I was sighted. So, you know, I think about getting married and having children and all of that and doing it younger whilst I have enough vision to sort of be comfortable. Obviously, I know there are people that do all of those things with no sight, but for me, that's not something I ever imagined for myself. So I'd love to be able to, you know, see my wedding with the limited vision that I've got and all of that sort of thing. So I'm always thinking a few steps ahead of where I am at the moment, which can be challenging for some people. I know my boyfriend finds it difficult with me always talking about the future, but I think it has to be done to an extent. Otherwise, I'll just get so caught up and worried about what could and couldn't happen. I like to have a plan.
Yeah, you've got to plan as best you can. And the other thing you learn, I suppose, as you get older is that don't try and fix the things you can't fix and work with what you've got.
Exactly. Like, I mean, I just take it day by day where I can in terms of like the sight loss. Like, I don't know when and if I'm going to lose all my vision. But if, you know, that does happen, I hope to be able to adapt with it like I have with this. And I know many people with no sight at all that live, you know, happy, fulfilling lives. But for me, that's never been the case. I've always been somewhat sighted, so you know, obviously life is a struggle at the moment with the vision I've got. I've lost like 85% of it or something, so I mean, it's not like I'm doing well, but like it is a worry. But it's just something that could happen in the future. It's not right now.
Well, I know there'll be a lot of people listening right now who are finding your story inspirational and also can relate to it. It'd be great if you could come back and give us an update as you're going through university, Ruby.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I love talking about sort of my story, not for my benefit, but for the benefit of others, because I think with blindness and that sort of sight loss world, a lot of it is focused on older people and problems they have with their sight. Whereas for me, obviously, I'm only 21. And I've struggled to find resources and people my own age to talk to. And even at the sort of local guide dog forum, it isn't centered around, the young people's struggles with a guide dog. It's all about the general norm. So I do feel like a bit of an anomaly at times and a bit sort of out of the loop, I guess. So if I can help other people that might feel like that, I'd be more than happy to.
Well, Ruby, you just never know where life is going to take you. We are so glad that you spent some time chatting with us. Thank you so much. I wish you all the best for your endeavours at university, and we will speak with you again.
Oh, lovely. Thank you so much for having me.
For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.